Welcome to the Meta Woman Podcast. We address the issues, opportunities, and challenges facing women in the development of the metaverse, the biggest revolution since the internet itself. Every week, we bring you conversations with top female talent and business executives operating in the gaming and crypto industries. Here's your host, Lindsay the Boss Poss. The Meta Woman Podcast starts now.
Hello, and welcome to the Meta Woman Podcast, part of the Holodeck Media Podcast Network. I'm your host, Lindsay the Boss Poss, and from struggle to success, we're covering it all. To our returning listeners, you hear me say this every week, but thank you so much for supporting the show. For all the new listeners, please come back. I would love to have you. Today, we're welcoming a major guest from a company that hopefully all of you have heard of, and if not, I don't know where you've been living. Ashley Washington is the Game Changers EMEA product manager at Riot, where she works on building spaces for folks in marginalized genders to play, compete, and have fun. Ashley, I'm so excited to welcome you to the show. I'm giving you a short introduction because I would love for you to tell all the audience about what you do at Riot, what EMEA stands for, and how you enjoy it.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to being able to explain all of those things.
Yeah, give me a little quick background on what you currently do and how you like it and all of that stuff.
Yeah, so I guess the outward facing response to that is that I'm the product manager for Game Changers, which is a program that essentially supplements the Valorant competitive season by providing a tournament in order to create new opportunities for women in the Valorant esports community. What that actually translates to in the day-to-day is kind of a combination of me touching base with players and teams and people in the company about how things have gone so far, what we're trying to do with the tournament, dreaming up the best version of this, and figuring out how we can get it done. I do refer to this as professional dreaming because a lot of the time this is me coming up with the craziest, most amazing version of this tournament and then kind of stress testing it against the limits and what people actually want and things like this. But it's actually quite fun work. And at the end of the day, the product is this really killer competitive experience for the large amount of women in the Valorant community that we have in EMEA.
Yeah. Can you tell me what the acronym is and how to say it so that I do that properly? So everyone else knows. Is it EMEA or do they have like a fun way of making that into a word? And you just said the word. So do it again.
Yeah. EMEA is massive. It's Europe, it's Middle East, and it's Africa. This makes it sound like there's like a lot more in there than we actually deal with. But there are obviously like some key countries in the space that we deal with more so, and then areas you just won't really see pop up, at least not at this stage. I hope later.
I've never heard them grouped together in this way. So that's interesting. You know, we talk about like NA and SA, but never the EMEA region.
Also new for me.
Yeah, none of my international relations classes included the EMEA region. Instead, in that way. So that makes a lot more sense. I want to get into your history, how you made it into gaming, but let's start just by telling me about what you do with the Game Changers program from a high level perspective, like what the organization does, and from a perspective. I know you went into this a little bit with being a professional dreamer and following up with teams and all that, but would love to get kind of more of a high level overview. And then if you could just go even into more of what you do and what you enjoy, I guess.
Yeah. I think one thing that's really good to note here is that Valorant as a game and its community is already so massive and so diverse. There are a pretty large number of women playing Valorant, and it was sort of a natural opportunity, I think, to provide the competitive space for those women as well. If you look at the esports industry as a whole, you see that there's clearly a disparity in the amount of women in the main rosters in the professional space and the women that are playing the game at the highest skill levels. So Game Changers is basically meant to address this in a way, not only providing the platform for the women who are playing Valorant to play competitively, but also to give them a chance to build their skills if this is something that they want to do. This is something that's also very important to my work. I think on the low level, as far as like what this ends up looking like in terms of what I actually do. This is a lot of listening, I would say. I'm on social media. I'm talking to other people in the company. They might not even be working on Valorant. They might be working in League or something, kind of just to pull information about their own experiences, their opinions, and their ideas about how to create a space within the Valorant ecosystem that not only satisfies this need for more female talent, but also helps us truly serve the women in the space in a way that actually helps them. Because in many ways, you would think that just like making a tournament and saying only women can play in this is enough, but there are so many aspects to this and that would say the opposite, essentially, that this is not enough, that there needs to be growth opportunity, there needs to be support. There are a number of sensitivities to pay attention to when it comes to having women in the exact same structures that exist in esports already. And this is the kind of stuff that I look at, the opportunity itself to create the tournament and also the nuances that we have to process in figuring out what makes this the best case scenario for a woman in the Valorant ecosystem.
We're definitely going to dive more into that too. I want to just back up for a second because one of the topics that's come up on this podcast specifically so many times, and I've actually used Valorant and League as examples, is talking about building a culture from the ground up versus changing a culture that already exists. Obviously, when Valorant came out, it was huge. It was right. It was their second major project after League, but League's been around for a decade or two now at this point. We're really creeping up there. So I would love from your perspective, from someone who is at Riot and working in Valorant, just to know what you think about changing systems that are already in place versus building brand new systems, and what you think are the pros and cons to kind of both approach. Obviously, you are working in building a new system. And so I'm hoping that you're going to say that you think that's more fun and interesting just because that's the project that you're on. But I would love to know just what you think about that kind of changing what's already there versus building completely from scratch. Which one companies should, or what strategies other companies should kind of consider for addressing kind of the structural issues you talked about in both scenarios, and which one you think is more fun to work on.
That's a really good question. I have to say, and maybe this is an unconventional approach, but when I came into Riot as a person with a variety of different products in my background, I looked at this as something very unique and fresh. And I actually did not necessarily take a comparative perspective because I saw myself walking into, even if it is a new game, something that already exists. And I think that the best way to describe this would actually be more in the industry context, because you could flavor this any way you want. I mean, this could be any game you want. But if you look at the space as a whole, a lot of the issues that we see are actually replicating themselves. And I see the titles and looking at those titles and specificity of their communities to be sort of an obscuring factor in many cases. And honestly, sometimes a crutch for kind of excusing repetitive behaviors that kind of perpetuate the issues that we're seeing. So I think one of the things that I looked at that I honestly recommend most companies or organizations look at in general when approaching this is really that the system that exists is the industry itself. We are both inadvertently and sometimes deliberately perpetuating the problems that are appearing there, whether that's predominantly male rosters in the game or predominantly male management teams in an organization, for example, in the esports industry. This stuff all feeds into itself. And I think one of the really important things to think about in terms of the competitive space for Valorant and how to approach, how I approached figuring out how to sort of improve it, I guess, would be a better way to describe it, is really that we need to, A, create visibility around these issues. And I think sometimes the best way to do that is to try to do something and highlight the problems that we're facing, for example, be open about the issues that we run into in the process. And also to create, most importantly, not just a competitive space, but a safe space for the women that are in the space to engage with, because this safe space should really exist across the board. One would argue that the system itself should be a safe enough space that the women don't need the safe space to begin with, right? And I think that once that safe space is created, it's then important to see how you can incentivize the development of that safe space in its effectiveness. Because in some ways, the safe space being there isn't enough. There has to be sort of like an awareness of why it's needed constantly, because to this day, I guarantee you, regardless of which organization is running the initiative, that there will be people criticizing whether or not it makes sense to create a space that's just for women. You know, is that perpetuating the problem? Is this, you know, making it worse that you like create this safe space where only women can play and no men can be, for example? Is that anti-diversity, for example? Essentially, with Game Changers, we look at this and we try to highlight the fact that women entering the space are not entering the space on even footing. So the safe space is essentially necessary so that they can build the same skills that male players have without dealing with the stuff that keeps them from already being there. So the toxicity and the preference for men on the teams and stuff like this. They develop those skills there. They test those skills against other women in the community. Community is built, shared experience is highlighted, which in turn increases resilience for the space, I would say. So the ability to face that adversity and feel comfortable doing it, to know that your presence is wanted and supported by, in this case, a major organization with a great title that you're engaging with, and that this should then translate to a more diverse industry in general. I would say any organization or company that's looking at this issue should really think not only about, hey, are we including women, but are we setting them up for success? Are we just introducing women to the space and expecting that they succeed because they have the opportunity? Or are we really setting them up to take advantage of the same things that male players have in this space? Are they going to be at the right skill level to face success here, to see success here? Are they going to be able to endure the obstacles that might exist in the space? Are they mentally prepared? Things like this. These are the questions that really have to be asked, because I think in general, in terms of initiatives like this for women, you have to move beyond the baseline. And I think that it's an uncomfortable pill to swallow, but the baseline is the existence of the space. It really is. The existence is baseline. That's MVP, okay? It's the first thing, but you have to iterate. You have to make sure it's a space where you're also equipping those who are disadvantaged with the capacity and ability to see real success and know that the promise that we're making is one that we're ready to follow up on.
That makes sense to me. And it's so funny that you bring that up, because one of the conversations I was having yesterday, someone had pointed out that problem curation is one of the key, or it's basically the starting point for actually solving the problem. So with what you're talking about, it's like figuring out exactly how, or kind of that point at which women are stopping their progression and addressing those issues. It's so interesting that this problem curation thing has kind of come up for me like very, very many times recently, because I think that a lot of women I've talked to on the show have basically said progress is happening, but it's a lot slower than we expected. And I think part of the reason for that slowdown is that you're right, that there's this sense that, well, women can play competitively now. So there's this kind of equality. And you were actually the one who taught me about this framework, that there's this equality that, oh, women can play now, but there's not the equity in what opportunities are available, in what skills are developed, in how environments are framed to be welcoming to women who are learning how to play the game. And so that was so interesting for me, like kind of putting those two things together with problem curation and equity versus equality. I feel like so many of the women I talk to now, I can think back on those conversations and think they are happy that there is equality and unhappy that the equity portion hasn't been addressed. And that is the slowdown in the movement that we've had. I don't know if that, does that make sense to you? As the one who taught me this framework.
Definitely. That's exactly it. Yes, it's the missing ingredient in most cases, where it's like, okay, I mean, the tournament is there. What's the issue? You know, they're trying to leave the tournament and do other parts of the ecosystem and they're not finding success. Why, for example? Can we be thinking about ways to make it easier for women to move from Game Changers into the rest of the ecosystem so that they're prepared to do that? Sometimes it's not even just about skill. Sometimes the skill is there. Okay, but, you know, current rule sets would say that if you're participating in one part of the ecosystem, you can't appear in another part of it, like in another tournament circuit. With Game Changers, for example, we've taken steps to make it so that a Game Changers participant can actually be in other parts of the ecosystem if they want to. That's not a rule that exists for other players in the ecosystem. That's what equity looks like. Sometimes equity is not like it's the same for everybody. Sometimes you have to make sure that the disadvantaged group has the boost that they need to match the rest. And these are kind of the tough decisions that you have to make in order to like actually see success manifested in the space, I would say.
How are advertisers, sponsors, companies who want to partner, all of that, reacting to the creation of this program? I mean, what I'm hoping you're going to say is tons of people are on board and they're backing up their word and everyone's super committed to making Game Changers work. I know that I ask this because there's obviously a lot of tide and push towards social change in all kinds of directions. And we do see companies sort of stepping up. But as we all know, that those promises can also be a little empty or maybe not as supportive. So as the person who's kind of overseeing this program and helping develop it, what are you finding with outside companies coming in? Yeah, all those, you know, sponsored collaborators, all that stuff.
In my experience, the reaction is pretty positive. And I think one reason that this is the case is because the problem that we're seeing in the esports ecosystems are not unique to the esports ecosystems. They're seen in the tech space in general and in a range of other industries. It's a relatable problem, I guess is a good way to put it. And I think a lot of times what you see, especially if the sponsors are in the tech industry as well, is that this is also an important message for them to be expressing in a way to show support for the Game Changers initiative, because I think the hope is that it speaks to their intentions as well as their own organization. And I feel like this is a really great, it's a great synergy and purpose, honestly, that this matches up. Does anybody like using the word synergy? I think it's a really good matchup, honestly, like the ability to say, hey, you know, and especially with an initiative, when you like agree to sponsor initiative, hey, we're all like committed to figuring this out together and making sure that the resources are there to do so. One of my hopes is that we see more sponsors for other non-gaming industries coming in to, you know, engage with the initiative, because I think this just makes the message larger. I honestly think that's really great. So what I've seen is actually really great reaction. I think it's always a question of like, is the initiative going to have enough money and stuff? Because usually these things aren't going to be like the biggest moneymaker in the portfolio. But I think when partners and sponsors show up to, you know, demonstrate that common belief by supporting the initiative in various capacities, we're seeing exactly what we would like to see when we do something like this. The effect kind of ripple throughout.
That's so wonderful. I'm very, very glad to hear that. Also, what has it been like from the team perspective? Are you having a lot of teams reach out to you? Are you helping to develop teams? What has the response been like from people who actually play? Like, I'm hoping that there's, you know, 1,000 people clamoring to get your attention and join Game Changers. But what's that kind of been like from building up the competition, that side of it?
Honestly, it's great. I think it's also complicated. So you have like a few perspectives when it comes to teams. You're going to have people coming from a lot of different backgrounds. And I think this is maybe one of the most interesting parts, because having worked in esports before, I would say I'm not like a stranger to orgs and teams. But coming into the Game Changer space, you see a variety of different types of orgs and teams. Some have really big organizations behind them that also have main teams. And, you know, they're already making a nice amount of money. And then some are, you know, girls that got together that are in school together to, you know, play. And then some are like organizations that maybe aren't as successful, but are hoping to find success in the Game Changer space. So reception varies depending on like what the team is hoping to get out of the experience, I would say. Overwhelmingly positive for sure. And this is something I'm so excited to see. And one of the reasons I was so excited to take this position is because there's so many people in the community who are just enamored by the initiative. They love it. And it's something that they're very attached to. And I think that with that passion and attachment also comes, you know, some demands. And I think that they're totally valid. You know, these are the people we want to be listening to, honestly, when it comes to this whole Game Changer setup, really, because you know, we set out to create a safe space for women to engage in the competitive environment. And if they don't feel like they're able to do that, or if they feel like it's not something we're delivering on, then this is exactly the kind of thing we would like to hear. So I have to say, while it's overwhelmingly positive, it's also sometimes very tough. And that's good. I welcome this. I welcome the feedback. I welcome the criticism, because in general, I think that this helps us a lot. And I hope that in many ways, we're able to figure out what a mature Game Changers environment looks like. I think right now it's early days. This is our, I want to say, third year. Who's to say what a mature like time span of a tournament really looks like? But I think in our case, we're really still trying to figure out what our community looks like, where their skills are, where they need the most help, how we can help them best. So I would say that we're not necessarily in a super mature place. So all of this feedback that we're getting is going to help us figure out what people really want from it. Do they want it to look like the VRL? Do they want something completely unique to Game Changers and unique to the Game Changers experience? This is what we want to find out. And this feedback, positive or negative, is how we get there. But I do have to say, I was very proud to walk into a role where people are already in love with the tournament, because this is very inspiring for me.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like you have, well, I'm going to put it in basketball terms because I'm a former basketball player. So I play pickup games on Tuesday nights. They're very fun, but also terrible on Wednesday mornings. So I play with a bunch of people I grew up with, very casual pickup. And then obviously we go all the way up to the NBA. And it sounds like that's kind of where you are with the kinds of people that you're bringing in. You have very casual, loosely organized teams all the way up to well-built, well-organized and complex organizations. So how are you creating programs, tournaments, events, boot camps, whatever it may be, and balancing the needs of all those folks?
This is the question of the year, like literally. This is what I'm trying to think about right now. So we have to evolve this setup in general. Right now we have a tournament where people can come to play, which is great. This is so good already. It really is. I don't want anybody to feel like it's not great, because it's amazing. But what we do need to do, I think, in many ways, is figure out, you know, what's the next step to growing more of the talent in the space. So we have like a couple of really dominant teams right now. How do we get more teams that are dominating? How do we add to the space? Right now, it seems like skill disparity is a thing. So I would love to be able to create more opportunities to help players grow their skills, for example, or maybe do more of like a sharing of knowledge, because Riot has a really great platform for this. There's all kinds of stuff I think that we can offer in terms of knowledge to like help people feel more equipped for the space as well. I really think there are so many options, and honestly, I haven't been able to make any decisions yet, but this is one of the questions I'm asking myself every day. And when I talk to the teams and the players, this is my favorite part, really, getting to talk to the Game Changers players, because they have so many ideas for what they would like to see. And it honestly feels like there are a lot of really great options, and it's really just about picking the options that fit the community best.
Yeah, I think that's super fair. If you could have given me a perfect answer for that, then I don't know, you would, I don't know, that's like, that is the idea. So I definitely wasn't expecting that. I also think that, yeah, what you said, it's important to note that things are still great even when they're evolving. And honestly, things are better when people are also taking a look and seeing how you can continuously improve and build. So that was, I was definitely not expecting you to have like an 8-point plan on that one.
No, that's fine.
Let's pivot a little bit and actually talk about you, because this is unfortunate, but it's not every day that I get to meet a Black woman who works for a major AAA publisher. I know that there's been a huge push from publishers more recently, especially in the wake of a whole lot of bad news, to work on these things. That still doesn't mean, I've read these statistics on the show so many times and anyone can Google them, but that doesn't mean that the push is necessarily translating into results that we would like to see at the moment. So prior to Riot, were you finding it difficult to break into the games industry? And how do you think that we can get more people who look like you into the games industry?
Yes. I have to say that there were a lot of difficulties I had getting into gaming. I think that they were kind of for a variety of reasons. I came in from a non-tech background, and a lot of times when you want to get into games, it helps to have a tech background. There are still ways to get in. This is one thing I definitely have to say for anybody wanting to get in. There are still ways. The obvious thing to remember there is that not everybody in the gaming industry is a developer. So this is one of the things that I had to remember when trying to get in. And what this required of me at the time was to essentially kind of take a step back in my career level. I was a mid-level account manager for a dating company before I got into the gaming industry. And my first job in gaming was to test apps as a QA analyst, which can be technical, but it's not like, you know, quintessentially technical. I thought I was going to be a developer. This is how I ended up there. What was the hardest thing, I think, in the whole process, and this is even back when I was studying game design, is that I think that even if it's not mean-spirited, that sometimes people just don't expect women to know as much as men do in the space. I mean, I studied game design at New York University, which has an excellent game design program. And even when I was a gaming journalist, after studying a writing-heavy thing as well, so twice accredited here, I was still feeling like I had to validate my knowledge all the time. Like, people just could not believe that I really knew what I was talking about, even after writing the articles and things like this. That was still something I think that I dealt with a lot of times in the earlier part of my career, which was exhausting and oftentimes made me doubt myself. I have to say, there were definitely times where I considered leaving. But I think one of the things that I kept in mind, and one of the things I tell so many people who are from disadvantaged backgrounds and also underrepresented groups that want to get into gaming or tech, is that presence is also a win, because sometimes it's hard to move up, and sometimes that takes a long time, and sometimes the plan isn't clear, or you try and it doesn't work. In some spaces, hard work might not be enough. Sometimes you just have to make a move. But being there is already worth so much, because there's somebody out there who looks like you who isn't sure if they can make that move. And when they see you there year after year, month after month, whatever the time scale is, I'm looking at you 6 months in a company and the company goes down, girlies. That's also a win, by the way. Been there. presence is so, so, so valuable. And this is something that I think is really key to thriving in an environment that isn't necessarily made for you, because a lot of these setups just aren't made to accommodate women. Sometimes you get in there and like there aren't the right fixtures in the company to address the mental issues you might be dealing with, or the right kinds of like HR layers to deal with some of the discrimination you might face, things like this. I have to say, I feel really lucky to be where I am now, because there were lots of environments that weren't great for me that I kind of stuck out. And while I'm saying right now that presence is a win, it is not a loss if you leave. Pick your fights, because your well-being is sometimes not worth it either. But I will say that even if you feel like you're struggling in general, it's one of those things that I think is important to internalize as a sign of strength, and to see other people around you that do find success. And this is something that really helped me a lot, to see other women in positions of management in gaming or as developers and things like this. This really helped me, because it reminded me that I could do this, that someone's done it before, that this is not in fact impossible, even though it feels impossible. And that if you're hitting a stone wall where you are, that maybe the door is somewhere else, you know, that maybe it's just about a change of perspective or a change of place, and that it's still possible. It's not always your skills. I had a really great degree and went to a really great program, and it still was not enough for people. I urge pretty much anybody in my position to not immediately buy it if someone lays it down on your skills, because a variety of skills are required in this space. All the skills, almost. Almost all of the skills. There is a place if you want to be here. So this is what I would have to say you have to keep in mind in general. And then secondarily, that mental health is first. So, I mean, if it's not working, it doesn't mean that the door is closed forever, right? But if this is not healthy, then you're going to have problems anyway.
I think that's all important, just because I had graduated from an elite university with a bachelor's and a master's, and applied for, I think 120 jobs and got one call back. So it's like, it doesn't matter what your qualifications are sometimes. Like, there's a little bit of luck involved. There's a little bit of just continuing to try involved. Certainly things never go the way you want them to. And I actually want to talk a little bit more about that because you've mentioned your education. You've mentioned you were a games journalist. I know you had a couple other positions before joining Riot, and I know that you were very close to actually leaving the games industry before joining Riot. So what has been the thing that's kind of kept you going, kept you in the games industry? I know that this position, getting this position was kind of one thing. But also, what has this kind of variety of experiences, how has that been able to help you where you're currently at?
It starts with my humanities degree that everybody told me was useless. Just kidding. Okay. That did help me. I would have to say that the thing that kept me going was really remembering how much it meant to me to see other people thriving in the space is really what kept me going. I refused to have to take a job where I wasn't super enthusiastic about what I was working on. And so even when I was considering leaving the gaming industry, that was still a focus for me, like making sure that I'm close to something I love. And like you said, at the end of the day, that worked out. But it was really about focusing on evidence to disprove what was becoming an overly negative assumption that I had, that I would not find success or happiness in the space because there was just so much difficulty. So again, focusing like on those examples and really trying to gather the will to find a way no matter what. I think one thing that's amazing about the industry is that there are so many approaches to sticking around and finding a fit. And even if you feel like your best strength is like scheduling things, hello, esports, this is a
big... They need to be organized. Yes. I'm very type A, so yes. Exactly. If you are out there and skilled at organization, yes. Come into esports.
Absolutely. There is a place. And this is, I would say, what kept me going the most. While I feel very positive about my experience in general, I will say it wasn't always very clear what the positive was. It can be very easy to like latch on to the negative examples or the negative things that are happening in the space. But there are people trying really, really, really hard to fix this. And there are people who are willing to do the hard work to do it, even if it doesn't always look like the right thing. And this harkens back to my comment about equity and how sometimes things have to be set up a little bit differently, putting in the extra work to find more women, putting in the extra work to find people of varying cultural backgrounds. There are people out there doing that. This is not a done deal for the gaming industry, even if you hear like really terrible stories. There's so much happening. There's really so much happening. And this is what had me holding on.
Speaking of kind of like holding on, getting through, background, all that stuff. The last question is one I'm so excited to ask you about. I've been thinking about this since I met you. I'm super pumped to talk about this. Given that your path has been unconventional, I definitely want to talk a bit about you studying German, which hasn't come up yet. I would love to talk about how or if that's helped in your career. And I'm asking for three reasons. One is that I also love languages and I have studied Russian and I speak Spanish pretty proficiently, which is really fun. I think learning, too, is that I think languages can be a great way to learn a lot of skill sets, including like literal communication and patience when you don't have the words. And three, I think this is kind of an important lesson in what you just said and pursuing what you want to pursue and what you're good at and what you're passionate about. Just because the caveat, of course, is that you have to have the means and the resources to indulge in that kind of learning. But yes, so let's talk about German, the fact that you live in Germany. So I'm assuming that you actually use the language that you studied and how it may have helped you in your career.
Yes, there are so many layers to that, but I think like there are key layers. So like as a person learning German, which is a pretty difficult language, honestly, taught me a lot about how language and its conventions can give you a lot of insight into the way a culture is set up as well. I think people have like a lot of stereotypes about Germans, you know, being obsessed with rules and stuff. I mean, the language has a lot of rules, I'm not gonna lie, but there's also like a frankness and an honesty to the language.
You're talking to a Russian speaker, so like it's cool. I get it.
Yes, exactly. So it's one of those things that helped me get into the culture so easily. which sounds really niche because it's German, but actually when you look at how one language translates itself onto its culture, you realize that there's so much that you don't know about other cultures. Of course, you have this assumption anyway, okay? Like, I'm not Chinese, for example, so I don't know a lot about Chinese people and Chinese culture, of course. But I mean, there's like a different layer where you realize how much complexity there is to things like language barriers and intention and like the way someone approaches communication. One culture might prefer more explicit context for things. Another culture might, you know, prefer more implicit context. There's a really great book called The Culture Map about this, by the way. I love it. But language to me has always been super important to understanding how to communicate with other people, even if you're not speaking their language. And I have to say that for me, this first gave me the confidence to be able to leave the U.S. and pursue a career in Germany, because in general, I just became less afraid of not knowing. I became more confident about not making assumptions about my surroundings and kind of just leaning into where I am and immersing myself in the context. I mean, there are still things that I prefer as an American, but I feel far less judgy about things that don't match up, for example. And when it comes to my work, I would say I've been lucky to work in global companies. And when we say global here, we mean that they speak English. But this has not stopped me from speaking German with my German coworkers, which is always really fun because nobody expects me to speak German. This is probably for a variety of reasons, but I do enjoy the initial surprise when people realize that I do understand German fluently. And one thing that helps with my work at Riot specifically is that EMEA has so many countries in it. And no, I do not speak the language of all of those countries. However, it has made me realize the importance of extending the presence of the tournament, not just as it is, but in ways that leverage national identity a bit better in those spaces. We have so many people playing the game, for example, in Turkey. And I've been thinking about ways that we can like highlight the stories of players in Turkey, for example, highlight the stories of the teams in Turkey, or even as simple as we have regions that don't tend to get broadcast in their language. Can we get a broadcast in their language this year? You know, that kind of thing. So my openness with German and hopefully other languages one day. I'm trying to hit 5 by the time I'm 40, but hey, I don't know. I think that my general awareness in the setup has helped me a lot with just having a more flexible and fluid approach to how we can adapt an experience grown in a US-based company to the regions that are in EMEA, where we have already a bunch of really amazing teams participating, but the experience itself has not necessarily adapted itself to the range of cultures yet, I think, that are in the space. And I'm looking forward to like amping that up. We've already done such a great job of making sure that there are like multi-language broadcasts, but I feel like there's so much more potential, and I'm like really looking forward to tapping into that and maybe learning another language along the way. I don't know.
Yeah, so I wanna do some like rapid fire questions really quick, just because now you have made me so curious. Okay. About a couple of things. First, did you move to Germany first or get the job with Riot and then move to Germany?
Okay, Germany first, 2016, yes.
Crazy, that's awesome. So you've been there for a while. Second, what are the 5 languages you're looking to learn?
Portuguese, Brazilian Portuguese, Korean, Japanese, Russian, and probably an African language if I can.
Ooh,
or one dying language. An African language or a dying language. Because I want to like,
yeah, keep it alive.
Not let it die.
Spread it. Yeah,
exactly.
yeah, makes total sense. Well, if you ever need a Russian speaking partner, I am here for you. And if you ever learn any of the romance languages, let me know.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I will let you know.
That's awesome. Third, if you had to recommend another language for people to learn, what would it be?
I would recommend German.
Yeah.
Everybody says don't learn German. You should learn German. German's great. German is great, everyone. German is great.
Good to know. Okay. Fourth, do you count... Or how do I don't know exactly how to phrase this, but we'll get into it. Do you count programming languages as languages?
Oh, I'm wondering if the listener will be critical of this answer. I know a programming language. And I do not consider it a language. I know people put this on like their OKCupid profiles. Oh, I know C++. This is not LinkedIn. Okay. Programming languages are not languages. Sorry.
Okay. What about made up languages? What if you're fluent in, I'm losing all of the names of them, but there's several from things like Lord of the Rings.
Actually, I think these are more legitimate as like language options than programming languages. Like Simlish, for example, I know some very fluent Simlish speakers. If you're a Sims fan, then you know another language. The language from the like Game of Thrones, I think Dothraki. Okay, some people know Dothraki. Yes, fictional languages are a yes for me.
Okay, so we are yes on fictional languages, no on programming languages, and very positive on German as a language.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Got it.
Not biased at all.
Yeah, right. Definitely not. Okay, well, with all that in mind, I am going to hopefully very quickly summarize everything that we've talked about today. We started off with what you're doing at Game Changers and providing competitive space for women in Valorant and how it was natural, just because there's so many women who are interested in playing, competing, and building skills. If you look at the game space as a whole, the issues are replicating themselves, whether it's a newer game or an older game, and whether it's inadvertently or intentionally. There's kind of this perpetual feed into the problems just because we haven't necessarily addressed the structures yet. In order to help that, creating visibility, being open about the problems can actually help solve them. In order to help that, creating safe spaces is critical. Eventually, the hope is that you won't need that safe space because the competitive environment will be balanced. But until then, what Game Changers does and what creating that space can do is it helps women and other marginalized people start off on a footing where they can actually learn from their mistakes, learn through trial and error, learn just as in the way that everybody learns competitive play, but without that toxicity, without the difficulty needing to keep up, without the imposter syndrome, all the other things that keep people from progressing further and finding more opportunities. We talked a lot about problem curation and what we had talked about when I first met you, which was equality versus equity. The problem now, while equality is definitely still a problem in a lot of spaces, there are more opportunities out there for women, but there's not necessarily an equity in how women are able to take advantage of those opportunities, how they're able to take advantage and even finding them, building the skills for them, all of that stuff that's out there. So it's like, you know, to me, it's almost like giving someone a manual car when they only drive automatic. And it's like, well, you have a car now. It's like, but well, kind of need to learn the manual part. That was also a very spontaneous metaphor on my part. The problem is bigger than gaming and it goes into tech. So what you've been finding with programs, sponsors, collaborators, partnerships, all that stuff, is that companies are really excited to partner and that the Game Changers program itself and other programs like it are having ripple effects further into not only the games industry, but the tech industry. From the team perspective, it's a lot of different levels of organization. There's diversity in players, there's diversity in competition levels, there's all kinds of different people coming in that you're meeting with and bringing into Game Changers. In order to meet the needs of everyone from casual to the highly professional, it's important to constantly be evolving, constantly be listening to feedback, doing that professional dream thing that you do. And for the more competitive teams, there needs to be more competition and more players at that higher level competition. So growing the skills and sharing the knowledge is what's happening at those uppermost levels and to try to get more people into those uppermost levels. When you said that, it actually reminded me of Gino Auriemma, who is the coach of the UConn women's basketball team. And UConn was so dominant for so long that they were talking about removing them from the NCAA tournament. And he said, no, you're not going to automatically let us win. Everyone else needs to get better. And that's kind of what I think about with this. Adding more competition to those high levels is great. When trying to get into the games industry, we talked a lot about your background and how you actually got in. Not everyone is a developer. You can be a non-technical person. Women and other underrepresented people have to consistently show their knowledge and are met with surprise at that knowledge. You noted that you went to an awesome game development program at NYU and worked as a games journalist and are still fending off people who are surprised at what you know about games. But being there, being in the room, showing off your knowledge, being present is valuable. Even if it takes you a long time, even if the company goes under, even if there aren't great structures in place, being there is a win. of course, you added the important caveat, this is for as long as you can maintain your mental well-being and are relatively happy with your position. We ended with a discussion on languages, which is my absolute favorite. Learning language can help you feel comfortable with not knowing things, with learning how to communicate in all kinds of different ways, with not making assumptions about your surroundings, and it can help you in being confident in building a career outside of the US, which you did and moved 6 years ago to Germany, which is awesome. So the last section that we talk about, I'm going to change a little bit just because you have done an awesome job so far of reflecting on your career and on getting into games and on being present. So I want to really actually direct this at like your teenage self. So what is one thing you would like to tell your teenage self about getting into the gaming industry and being successful, like before, you know, any of the experience that you built up?
Yeah, this is a really great question and one that I get kind of often, actually. When I was a teenager, I didn't even consider working in games because it just didn't look like there was any possibility for me to work in games. I grew up playing games only with the guys in my life, never any of the girls. I didn't think I was ever going to understand computers well enough to work in games. So this question is always like very emotional for me because it just wasn't something that was even in my head. I loved games then and I wasn't even considering working with them. So one of the most important things I would have to say to my teenage self is that just because you don't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. This is one really important thing, I think. When you grow up kind of skeptical like me, interested in the sciences, you rely a lot on things that are present, I think. You want evidence. So being the evidence-driven little girl I was for most of my high school life, I didn't consider it. So first of all, yes, it's there. It's possible. If you really want this, you can do it without the illusion that it will only take hard work, because it might take more than that. It is possible. And I think my favorite thing about being able to do this position as well links to this, because I think that there are also women out there who play and love Valorant and don't even consider a professional career because of what they see, which is major teams with all male rosters. There isn't a rule saying it has to be that way. It just is that way. This is what they see. So they have no interest in engaging because they don't think they fit or that they're not good enough or that it might be too hard. And as a teenager, I didn't see that. I didn't think I would ever be good enough to be a programmer. I didn't think I was smart enough, keen enough, nothing. That can be developed. That can be grown. You know, you don't have to be born into the perfect predisposition to have that job. And the driving factor for it in general, and what I would love to let teenage Ashley know, is that actually loving it enough to want it is also something, it also has value. And it is essentially that passion and desire to be in the space, to work with games, translates to something that a lot of people who maybe found it really easy to get a job in the industry or just thought it made sense because they were offered the job might not have, which is this incredible resilience to the adversity that you might face, the creativity that comes from being just so passionate about something that you know it as well as you might know a relative or a close friend. This flexibility, this imaginativeness that comes with being very passionate about something is so important. And at the end of the day, if you're able to convey that in a cover letter or convey that in your career trajectory, like me going from QA to data science to journalism, whatever, to show that I'm willing to do these things just to be near something I love, that this too is something. It's not a sign that you don't know enough to be there, despite what you might hear or feel or what you might even be telling yourself, that it is actually your advantage. This is your skill. This resilience and this love of the space is a skill, and it will translate into other skills, and it will translate into a presence that people will eventually come to see that they cannot do without, that they will want you to be in their space to create great games or create an awesome tournament or whatever that ends up being. I think that this would be probably the most important thing I would say to teenage Ashley, as well as a lot of other things about like guys and life, but definitely this.
Ashley, thank you so, so much for coming on. Where can people find you, follow you, learn more about Game Changers, learn how to support Game Changers, all that good stuff. Plug everything.
Yeah. Okay. Everything you need to know about where to find me is that my username on Twitter is my name with no vowels. So Ashley Washington, but just remove all the vowels and you will find me on Twitter. And if you find me on Twitter, you will also find a link to my website. So if you would rather check out my website, you will find it there. But I recommend starting there. And maybe if we connect, I will tell you where else you can find me. Twitch, maybe TikTok. I don't know. My TikTok username is different because not everybody's ready for TikTok, Ashley. But hey, who knows?
I'm not ready for TikTok. You could have just stopped there.
No, you got to get with it. Come on.
Oh, that's a whole other data privacy issue we don't have time for.
No, thank you. This was really great. I'm happy to spread Game Changers.
Yes.
And Ashley.
Yes. Yes. Spreading in a good way too, in all the best senses of the word.
Yes.
For all listeners out there, be sure to leave those 5-star ratings and reviews. It helps other people find the show. Check out other Holodeck Media podcasts, including Meta Business and Business of Esports. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Lindsay Poss. I am not on TikTok. You can catch me Wednesday afternoons on the Business of Esports Live After Show, and you can catch this podcast in your feed every week.
Thanks for joining us here on Meta Woman. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast everywhere you get your podcasts, leave a 5-star review, and tell your friends, family, and colleagues all about us. Also, make sure to follow Meta TV on all socials to get more of the best metaverse content anywhere. Tune in every week for another episode of Meta Woman.